Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you all here to the Woodrow Wilson Center. My name's Kent Hughes. I direct the Project on America and the Global Economy. We have a very special treat for you in just a minute. And before we get to that treat, for those of you who are new, I was just going to say a word or two about the Woodrow Wilson Center. The center was established in 1968 as a living memorial to our 28th president, Woodrow Wilson. And as you may know, Wilson was the only president to actually earn a PhD. And he was convinced that in his own life, he combined the world of ideas and the world of action, the world of policy analysis, in a sense, and the world of actually making those political and policy decisions. And when Congress established the Woodrow Wilson Center, they asked us to pursue that mission. And what we try to do is to bring together the thinkers and the policymakers with the vision of capturing Woodrow Wilson's conviction that you'd end up with better policy and at the same time much better research. And with that spirit in mind, we are absolutely delighted to welcome Senator Murray to the Woodrow Wilson Center. She really is someone in many ways who fits that Wilsonian mold, except she started out really by combining politics and education. She really got her start in many ways by saving a preschool program, having been told that she couldn't do anything about it. She went on then to be on the local school board, served in the Washington State Senate, then in 1992 was elected U.S. Senator from the state of Washington, and then reelected in 1998 by a wide margin. And she is now the senior senator from the state of Washington. Just on a personal note, as a native Oregonian, it's always great to have someone from the great Pacific Northwest. She's carried that passion for education into her work in the Senate. She has also served as chair and now ranking Democrat on the Transportation Appropriations Subcommittee, where she really has looked at the whole world of transportation in an integrated way, road, rails, some of those things that fly across the sky in which she has a particular interest. She's also looked at homeland security, a very important aspect of the transportation system, and really been a strong advocate on a host of issues that have affected the state of Washington and, of course, the country as a whole. I like to look back into her first campaign where she was known for really symbolizing her effort with a pair of tennis shoes. And I think people who watched her in the Senate are convinced that she's traded them in for a pair of track shoes. Senator, we're delighted to have you here.
Well, thank you, Kent, for that kind introduction, and to all of you for joining us here today. I am here today because I really believe that America's aerospace industry is gravely threatened by the aggressive subsidies and support that Europe showers on its domestic industry. Our workers and our economy are going to pay a high price if we do not wake up to this threat and take action. A century ago, Americans launched the Age of Flight, and for the past 100 years, our country has led aviation and aerospace, and that's meant great things for virtually every sector of our economy. But in this second century of flight, global leadership is up for grabs. For the most part, the American government has sat on the sidelines. But in Europe, there is a much different approach. It's an aggressive plan that threatens our workers, our economy, and our future. Today, I want to explore what European governments are doing to dismantle America's aerospace industry, and more importantly, what we need to do in response. I also want to tell you about legislation I've introduced today in the Senate and about a proposal that I just shared with the leaders of the Senate Armed Services Committee who are working on the Department of Defense Authorization Bill. I also want to take this opportunity to update you on the progress we have made and the discussions I have had since I gave a major floor speech on this challenge back on May 5th. First, though, I do want to thank Lee Hamilton, who is here today, and the Wilson Center for providing such a great forum for this discussion. Lee, time and time again, you have helped our country address some of the challenges before us. You've done it with the 911 Commission, and we are all grateful for your service to this country. I also want to thank Kent Hughes, the Global Economy Project, and the Wilson Center for inviting me here today. In this room, we have gathered leaders from the aerospace industry and the public policy community as scholars, analysts, representatives, government leaders, and trade officials. All of you follow this issue closely, and you are the people who can help alert our country to this threat and help us respond before it's too late. For those of you who don't know me, there are three things that will help you understand where I come from. First of all, I recognize that it is an uphill battle to bring some balance to the commercial aircraft marketplace. And I'm used to taking on challenges that a lot of other people say are impossible. When I decided to run for the Senate back in 1992, people said I didn't have the experience. They said that I couldn't raise the money. They even said I was too short. Well, I want you to know when I got to the United States Senate, I became the fourth tallest woman in the United States Senate. So I am used to taking on big challenges and the people who say it cannot be done. Secondly, I represent a state that is at the forefront of commercial aviation. It should surprise no one that I take great pride in being an aggressive advocate for my state's aerospace interests. I know the families who suffer when there are layoffs. They are my friends. They're my neighbors. I see them everywhere I go. After September 11th, I stood up to the White House and ensured that laid-off aviation workers got extended unemployment benefits. I've gone on trade missions. I've fought to fund the Ex-Im Bank. I've been there on the happy days when major aviation contracts were signed. And I've been there on the difficult days when American workers lost out to questionable foreign tactics. So I am proud to stand up for aerospace families. I'm sure some will interpret my remarks as just an aggressive defense of Washington state interests. That's fine, but it is not the whole story. What I have seen happen to families and communities in my state over the past decade reaches far beyond the families I represent. And now it threatens millions of American jobs, the future of transportation, and our economic competitiveness. I hope that my experiences in Washington State can save our country the pain that my state has experienced. The third thing you should know is that I am a free trader. Washington State is the most trade-dependent state in the nation, so I know the benefits of trade, and I do not approach this as a protectionist. So with that context in mind, I want to cover 4 points with you today. First of all, I want to give you a snapshot of aerospace jobs today and what is at stake. Secondly, I will outline the threat posed by Europe's plan to take over commercial aerospace. I'll show how the different ways that Europe and America view aerospace are putting our country at a severe disadvantage. Third, I want to reveal how Europe is putting their plan into action through Airbus and the European Aeronautics Defense and Space Company in ways that dramatically distort our market. And finally, I want to focus on action. These days, there is a lot of tension over the trade of large commercial aircraft. Our government is looking at a lot of options, some severe. I want to share with you the legislation I introduced today, the letter I sent today to the defense bill conferees, and the rest of my aerospace agenda. Everyone in this room knows how important commercial aerospace is for our economy. Our leadership in aerospace has helped American industries from healthcare to automobiles become safer, more efficient, and more productive. According to John Douglas, who is the president of the Aerospace Industries Association of America, he says, the aerospace sector, and I quote, generates economic activity equal to nearly 15% of our nation's gross domestic product and supports approximately 11 million American jobs. Our commercial aerospace industry directly employs more than 2 million Americans with an average salary of $47,000. But unfortunately, we are losing these good-paying jobs at a rapid rate. In the past 15 years, we have lost 700,000 American aerospace jobs. These are scientific, technical, and manufacturing jobs. 700,000 high-skill, high-wage jobs gone. Lately here in Washington, D.C., there's been lots of talk about how American jobs are being shipped overseas in search of cheaper labor. Aerospace is different than other industries because aerospace jobs are not low-wage, low-skilled jobs that move to wherever the labor market is. These are high-wage, high-skilled jobs that we need to keep in America, but we are being aggressively challenged by Europe for those jobs. Unless we wake up to this threat, we will lose an industry that Americans created and that has brought innovation to every corner of our economy. We are already seeing that threat in the state of competition between Boeing and Airbus, the only two companies in the world who make large commercial aircraft. In less than a decade, Boeing's market share has dropped from 80% to less than 50%. Meanwhile, Airbus market share has risen from the teens to just above 50%. Today, Airbus has a $140 billion backlog of aircraft orders. That is a 204% increase over the Airbus backlog in 1995. So we are clearly losing our leadership of an industry that we Americans created. And while there are many contributing factors, it is clear that Europe has a plan to dominate commercial aerospace and to lead the second century of flight. Next, I want to talk about how the U.S. and Europe view commercial aerospace because, you know, we really have two very different visions. Let me start right here at home. For us in America, commercial aerospace is seen as a private business. Some companies will win, some companies will lose. We let the marketplace decide. But in Europe, aerospace is a jobs program. The European governments will fund and support their domestic industry because creating aerospace jobs in and of itself is considered a priority. Europe views aerospace as a long-term investment. They are aggressively subsidizing their industry without regard to making a profit or following the business rules that American workers must follow. Simply put, they're willing to pay any price to take over American leadership. Don't take my word for this. Here's what the 2001 report to the European Commission titled European Aeronautics, A Vision for 2020 States, and I will read it. European aeronautics has grown and prospered with the support of public funds, and this support must continue if we are to achieve our objective of global leadership. That's from the European Commission. Europe has an aggressive vision for the future of aerospace. It wants to use significant public investments to create and sustain jobs, largely at the expense of U.S. competitors and workers. Here's how the Commission on the Future of the United States Aerospace Industry put it in 2002, and I quote, "Unfortunately, it appears that European officials intend to continue directly subsidizing EU companies. The recently unveiled EU aerospace policy strategy calls for an increase in subsidies to continue building market share, largely at the expense of U.S. companies," close quote. So Europe's plan is to use government funding to subsidize its aerospace industry and to free it from the normal business rules that American companies must follow. As a result, Airbus and EADS enjoy virtually risk-free free product development and operate far outside the bounds of fair competition. All of this comes at the expense of U.S. companies and American workers. Unfortunately, our government is sitting on the sidelines. We are following a normal business model, and we're being overtaken by the Europeans, who are following a social welfare model where it doesn't matter if they lose money. It doesn't matter if their products fail. As a result, today there is no fair competition over large commercial aircraft. Private U.S. companies, responsible to their shareholders, are confronting subsidized companies who are aggressively backed by their governments. These companies are not responsible to shareholders, and European governments hold significant ownership positions. As I said, European governments don't care if these companies make a profit as long as they create jobs. Understanding how the Europeans approach aerospace is the first step to awaken our elected and government officials to the fact that we must act if U.S. companies and workers are to survive Europe's plan to dominate global aerospace. The next step is to see how the Europeans are putting their vision into action. And that's the third issue that I want to focus on today. Airbus and its parent company, EADS, represent the European effort to overtake American aerospace workers. Airbus is celebrated in Europe for its growth and its accomplishment. In this country, however, Airbus is responsible for exporting thousands of family wage aerospace jobs to the European continent. Airbus was created 30 years ago by the French, German, British, and Spanish governments specifically to compete with the United States. For more than three decades, Europe has aggressively protected and promoted Airbus and now EADS. I briefly want to walk with you through the many types of support that European governments shower on Airbus. That support gives Airbus an endless array of cards to play when it's competing with Boeing for a major contract, and ultimately, that government support kills American jobs. The first example concerns massive market-distorting subsidies. The most egregious subsidies are launch aid subsidies directly to Airbus. Virtually every aircraft model has been heavily subsidized by European governments. These subsidies are success dependent, meaning they don't have to be repaid if the aircraft model does not become commercially successful and profitable. Airbus has received at least $15 billion in direct subsidies to develop its family of aircraft. If Airbus had to borrow that money from commercial lenders at market rates, it's estimated that Airbus would have had to spend $35 billion to develop its aircraft models. And launch subsidies directly to Airbus are just the beginning of European support for their Airbus in aerospace industry. There are also research subsidies, facility subsidies, and supplier subsidies. Those subsidies create an uneven playing field and allow Airbus to do things that normal private companies cannot afford to do. As a result, Airbus has grown without assuming any of the financial risk and accountability that U.S. firms have to contend with every day. Today, Airbus is a mature company with more than half of the market for large commercial aircraft, but it is still being subsidized like it was new to the marketplace. My question for all of us is, how long are we going to let this go on? Are we going to wait until Airbus controls 100% of the marketplace before we demand that their subsidies must end? Unfortunately, heavy subsidies are just the beginning of Airbus's extraordinary government support. The other tools that Airbus uses to win sales includes bribes, landing rights, value guarantees, walkaway rights, and threats over unrelated trade deals. Airbus's history of graft and corruption is well documented. Last June, The Economist magazine ran a story titled "Airbus's Secret Past: Aircraft and Bribery." The article details Airbus's sales campaigns in India, Syria, Canada, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait that all involved corruption and bribes. In fact, up until 2000, Airbus and other French companies were allowed to take a tax deduction for bribes. Imagine that. You bribe somebody to buy your airplane, and then you take a tax deduction for the bribe that you just paid. Those are just some of the market-distorting tools that Airbus and EADS use. Airbus purchases have long been linked to landing rights at Europe's busiest airports. You know, it's a very attractive incentive to offer airlines in exchange for buying your airplanes, but it distorts the market because it's something that only Airbus can offer because of its government patronage. Airbus also aggressively discounts the purchase price of its planes, often at the last minute and often below the cost of production. Time and again, it has been reported that Airbus won a sales competition by offering planes at prices that seem impossible for a profit-driven company. And they were impossible for a normal company, but not for a company that's backed and funded by Europe's deep pockets. Once again, government support allows Airbus to play far outside the normal bounds of competition. And frankly, Airbus is doing it again right now. Airbus is working as hard as it can to sabotage Boeing's new 787 airplane. They are offering huge discounts to airlines to order Airbus now rather than wait for the 787 to enter service. It's bad enough that Airbus gets subsidies and sweetheart financing to bring new models online. Now they're using government support to hurt Boeing's new plane that is still several years away from flying. Another way Airbus distorts the market is by guaranteeing the value of the plane that it sells. It's a very attractive incentive for an airline, but it's also unfair because it allows one company to completely distort the marketplace. If this happened in any other field, like automobiles, the U.S. Congress would be up in arms. And again, it's something that only Airbus can offer because of the support it gets from European governments. And there's more. Airbus also offers walk-away rights to some customers to get them to buy Airbus planes. That means a customer can walk away from an order with no hard feelings. In some cases, like the A380, Airbus gives walk-away rights right after the delivery of the airplane. The airline can return that plane and get its money back. It's a great deal for airlines, and it's only possible because of the subsidies and forgivable loans that Europe showers on its domestic industry. But it's not just bribes and corruption and landing slots and discounts and value guarantees and walkaway rights. Airbus and European government officials regularly link Airbus sales to other trade issues. There is constant cooperation between Airbus and European leaders to pressure foreign airlines and governments to buy their Airbus aircraft. We saw this EU pressure on full display in the last month. According to a June article from the Turkish press, Turkey's accession to the EU was directly linked to the purchase of an Airbus aircraft. Here is what the German Minister of Foreign Affairs said in the article, and this is a quote. "France is very serious. It will be a serious drawback. Convincing France is crucial. Let 80% of the airplanes you purchase be Airbus. You must do this." Close quote. German Minister of Foreign Affairs. I should add, the article then quoted the German Foreign Affairs Minister as saying that his remarks had to be kept off the record. Oops. But even without the German minister's statement, what is in the public record already is overwhelming. But I can tell you that it is only the tip of the iceberg of what's actually happening. I have been briefed by some of our government intelligence agencies, and the examples I just shared are just a very small part of the public record of what is happening in large commercial aircraft global marketplace. The bottom line is that today there is no such thing as fair competition in the sale of large commercial aircraft, because whatever American companies do, European companies always have another card to play, another inducement to offer, another trick up their sleeves because of the vast support they get from European governments. It's long past time to ask, when are we going to demand that these market-distorting practices stop? I can tell you that if we don't stop soon, we will not have an aerospace industry in America anymore. Airbus and Eads plan to dominate the aerospace industry. In April, the co-CEO of Eads, Mr. Philip Camus, said, and I quote, in 10 years, we'll be number one everywhere worldwide. Their plan is to target the U.S. defense market. They want American taxpayers to pay a French company to put American aerospace workers out of work. That's why right now they're trying to break down our Buy America laws. Right now, they are having some success in the Senate Defense Appropriations Bill. I have a proposal to address that, which I'm going to share in just a moment. But the things that they are trying to do are so outrageous that they realize they need to now make Airbus seem like an American company. So they are now pulling out all of the stops to try and put on an American face. Today, Airbus and Eads are engaged in a very slick campaign to market themselves as an American company to policymakers and to the general public. They are running a campaign of misinformation and half-truths to secure more U.S. business for European workers. Their campaign is particularly evident here in the Capitol, where Airbus is seeking to influence both the administration and the Congress. Airbus and Eads have hired a small army of lobbyists who have ties to the administration, including former officials at the White House, Defense Department, Commerce Department, Transportation Department, Ex-Im Bank, OPIC, and NASA. Frankly, I suspect we've got a few Airbus lobbyists with us today, and I welcome all of you here. But wherever they are, their lobbyists are working very hard, and they are making false claims about Airbus's impact on our U.S. economy. Simply put, they are trying to get us to see them as an American company. And I just want to debunk three false claims that Airbus is making here in Washington, D.C., and all across the country in speeches and in advertisements. First of all, they claim that Airbus has created and supports 120,000 jobs in this country. Now, I asked the Commerce Department to validate that claim, and they could only document 500 jobs, not 120,000, 500 jobs. It's clear that their claims on jobs are just as stretched as their claim on subcontractors. Airbus says it subcontracts with as many as 800 firms in the U.S. In fact, they've moved that number up and down over the years. But the Commerce Department, after looking into this at my request, could only come up with 250 firms. Not 800, 250. And finally, Eads claims that it does $6 billion in business in the United States each year. Well, here's another interesting thing about $6 billion that Eads will not advertise. That is about the size of the trade surplus that Eads is now running with the United States. $6 billion. Not a trade surplus with another country, but with another company. $6 billion. The bottom line is that Airbus and Eads are not helping America's aerospace industry. They are destroying it. Already, 700,000 American workers have lost their jobs, while Europe keeps adding new workers to the Eads and Airbus payroll. When we take a close look at Eads, we see it's actually a horrible deal for American workers. According to Eads documents, North America provides Eads with 35% of its revenue, about 10 billion euros. But North American workers only make up 2% of all the company's jobs. So we give them one-third of their business, and we get back 2% of the jobs. I think that's a bad deal for America. The truth is, Airbus and Eads are exporting U.S. jobs, suppliers, and dollars to Europe as fast as they can. It is clear to me that Airbus is making phony claims now about its impact on the U.S. economy, hiring lobbyists, and mounting a PR campaign so it can position itself to steal the tanker contract from American workers. Perhaps the most offensive Eads claim of all was stated in a letter to me by Mr. Ralph Crosby, who is the president and CEO of Eads North America. I have posted his letter on my website, by the way, if you'd like to see all of it. In it, Mr. Crosby claims to me that Eads is committed to being, quote, a strong U.S. citizen. Their history, however, tells a very different story. The truth is that Airbus and Eads have been willing suppliers to nations that the United States considers either rogue states or state sponsors of terrorism. According to one news article that dates back to 2001, the Airbus Industry Consortium views those countries against which U.S. or U.N. sanctions are in place, Libya, Iran, Iraq, North Korea, as potentially representing major opportunities, Noel Forjard, Airbus CEO, indicated yesterday. And it's been widely reported that Airbus was trying to sell planes to Saddam Hussein's Iraqi Airways while UN had sanctions. So let me set the record straight. A foreign company that looks on America's enemies as major business opportunities is not a good citizen of the United States and should not be rewarded with U.S. taxpayer dollars. Which brings me to the most important point today. What I think we need to do now to respond to this threat and what I am doing in the United States Senate, including two actions that I am announcing today. Let me offer four specific suggestions. First, we should hold Europe accountable for its market-distorting actions. We need to demand that Europe work with the U.S. to build real competition across all sectors of the aerospace industry, and we have several options before us. One way to hold Europe accountable is to look seriously at a trade case that would challenge Europe's failure to adhere to its treaty obligations. Boeing and Airbus may be the two combatants in a trade case, but we have to recognize that the future of aerospace is larger than a trade case or a Boeing dispute with Airbus. A trade case is not my preferred course. It's really sort of the nuclear option because it would ultimately hurt both sides. We may soon have no choice but to blow up the status quo in large commercial aircraft and global aerospace trade. The bottom line is this: the status quo is intolerable. The deck is now so stacked against the United States aerospace industry and its future that the U.S. side may have less to lose in a drawn-out trade fight between the U.S. and Europe. We do have other options short of a trade case. I can tell you that since my speech on the Senate floor 2 months ago, I've had several conversations with Ambassador Bob Zelik, the United States Trade Representative, and with Commerce Secretary Don Evans as well, and I'm very pleased with the attention that Ambassador Zelik has given to aerospace. He understands the challenges before our country if we are to be serious about an aerospace future for Americans' workers. We'll see how far this administration is willing to go, but so far I give them high marks for their recent involvement, and I will keep working with them. I can tell you that there are discussions taking place at the highest levels of our government, and having worked on this challenge for many years, I am more encouraged than ever that people are taking it seriously and that we are close to making progress. There clearly is one step we should take. It's time to signal our intention to withdraw from the outdated 1992 U.S.-EU bilateral agreement on trade and civil aircraft. That agreement has long since run its course, and today I am ready to call on the administration to formally notify the EU of our intention to withdraw from that agreement. Once we serve notice, we will have 1 year to see if the Europeans are serious about creating a level playing field. My second recommendation is that the United States should not reward Eads and Airbus for their market-distorting, job-killing behavior. Airbus wants U.S. policymakers and the public to buy its campaign that it's a good U.S. citizen. It's false, and they're trying to mask the real harm they pose to American workers. And most offensively, Airbus is working to undermine both the Air Force and the Boeing Company to kill the tanker program so that it may ultimately outsource tanker manufacturing to Europe. If we reward their underhanded methods, then American taxpayers will be paying Europe to help finish off our aerospace industry. Another option before us involves more of a carrot than a stick. As you know, our country has Buy America laws that requires significant amounts of U.S. content in the goods and services purchased by our government, including the Department of Defense. Lately, however, with the support of Airbus lobbyists and some in Congress, those provisions are now under attack. The Defense Authorization Bill that passed the Senate has language in it to weaken the Buy America laws. That bill is soon going to go to conference. Today, I sent a letter to the chairman of both the Senate and the House Armed Services Committee with a few suggestions about how to proceed on Buy America. I don't think we should rewrite these laws unless we have a clear idea of how it will affect our country. So I propose that we make no changes for the coming fiscal year, but that we commission an independent study to inform Congress on what changes would be responsible. This study should examine the current state of competition in global aerospace, everything from the issues I've raised today to technology transfer, terrorism and weapons proliferation, and the impact of changes on our domestic aerospace industry. The study should also address issues like market-distorting practices, subsidies, and government ownership. We have a responsibility to American taxpayers to use their resources wisely. That applies here as well. If we are to allow European firms to access significant defense contracts at the expense of U.S. firms and workers, we have to wisely ask our European allies to meet some of the same good government standards adhered to by U.S. firms. So I will also recommend to the defense conferees that this study includes good corporate governance issues like the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, to name a few. Our goal should be to compile a set of criteria for foreign countries and companies to meet in order to get greater access to America's defense dollars. U.S. policymakers have an obligation to make sure that European firms play by the same rules and regulations that U.S. companies must abide by in order to work for the Department of Defense. My own view is that free trade, particularly among our allies, can be beneficial to the global aerospace market, to the commercial defense and space markets, which are all linked. But before we move forward, we have to ask some tough questions, establish the rules of the road, and demand adherence to international norms and to U.S. law. My proposal offers a third way that avoids protectionism while ensuring that our aerospace industry is part of a fair competition. So far, the debate has been between advocates of free trade who don't understand the aerospace market and protectionists who would keep our markets closed without hesitation. I think that my proposal offers us a middle ground that promotes trade and competition and American jobs. It's also a carrot that could accomplish more than a trade reward. We could use greater access to defense contracting among our allies and trading partners as an incentive to create global market for aerospace product that spurs real competition, drives aerospace forward with new technologies, companies, and jobs, and recognizes legitimate national security needs and protects our taxpayers. Finally, we should act boldly to embrace many of the recommendations from the Commission on the Future of the U.S. Aerospace Industry. The administration is acting on a number of fronts, and Congress must do more as well. As a first step, Congress should create a joint committee on aerospace, a dedicated group of House and Senate members with a targeted agenda can help the administration and the country recommit itself to the next century of global aerospace leadership. Today, I introduced legislation to create a Senate Select Committee on Aerospace. My bill will establish a bipartisan select committee with 11 members tasked to conduct a thorough review of the current and future competitiveness of the United States aerospace industry, study issues like global competition, workforce development, technological challenges, and the appropriate federal role in this industry, and then issue a report and recommendations to Congress in order to promote U.S. aerospace interests. The Senate Select Committee on Aerospace that I propose today will help Congress recognize that our future is very much tied to aerospace, commercial aerospace in particular. My friends, there is a battle for the future of the aerospace industry. Europe is putting its full support, subsidies, and power behind its industry, its citizenry, and its working. We have got to get up off the sidelines. I am not willing to surrender our leadership in the second century of flight, and I hope that you will be part of this effort to save American jobs. I want you all to know that I've got a special section on my website that covers this challenge in detail. You can read or watch my earlier Senate speech on this topic. You can review the letters that I have exchanged with Secretary Rumsfeld, the Commerce Department, and EADS, and you can examine all of the original sources that I have quoted today as well as the others. The web address of that is murray.senate.gov/aerospace. So in closing, let me just say that this is a critical industry, and these are jobs that are worth fighting for. America can lead the second century of flight as we have led the first, but we're going to have to take aggressive action, and I hope that you will join me in this endeavor. Thank you again to all of you for coming down today, and thanks again so much to the Wilson Center for sponsoring me and organizing dialogues like the one we're having today. Thank you very, very much.